So what is translanguaging, right? Translanguaging is using language as a unitary meaning-making system of the speakers. Now, what we have to remember is that translanguaging is always with all of us who are bilinguals, right? You may be hearing what you think is English now, but I am selecting from my unitary repertoire signs that you say they're English and I recognize as English, right? But so it's not that English and Spanish do not exist. It is that from my own perspective, what I have is I have one language repertoire from which I select features that are appropriate to communicate. So, and this was given to me by a child, because always children know best. And it's important to know that I didn't think of this in my head. I saw this because I started out as a bilingual teacher. And all my life, I've worked in classrooms with teachers. And I would go in, and the teachers would say, "Oh, today I'm teaching in Spanish." And then I would go in, and the children were using their entire language repertoire. The teachers were sometimes also using English. And when I asked one child one day, "Well, what is happening here?" He said to me, "Well, even though Spanish runs through my heart, English rules my veins." And I thought, okay, we have to think then, how do we teach this bilingual child so that it's a whole system? It is not separate as we see it, right? So, just to review, just to remind you, there are two perspectives. One is the external societal perspective, from which we say there are two named languages as standardized conventions that belong to nation states, and this is important, and that schools teach and test. So they're very important. Now, notice I'm not saying that they're not important. I'm saying that they are important, except we cannot start there. If we start there, we are not starting from the epistemology of a bilingual child, right? If we start there, it doesn't work. We are talking about the internal perspective of the speaker, the language as a unitary meaning-making system of speakers that is always with them and that reflects this entanglement of worlds, cultural practice, and words, linguistic practices in which all bilinguals are always immersed, right? And that I'm saying that that is most important. And what we do in schools is we emphasize that part and ignore the language repertoire of the child, right? So I'm saying that both are important, but I'm saying that this is most important. And that's what we miss sometimes, right? So I just want to sort of think about these three concepts that we constantly work with. The idea of multilingualism, plurilingualism, and translanguaging. Multilingualism in the way that we use it in the United States, which I know is not the way that the European, that the Council of Europe has used, but multilingualism in the way that we use it refers to someone having a dominant language, an L1, and then having L2s and L3s that are below. It's a hierarchical relationship because we're thinking of what is dominant in society, that goes first, and then the others are afterwards. The plurilingualism concept does better, but they still are, they're talking about languages, and I still think they're talking about bringing together the European citizens, and therefore they talk about the partial competence that people could have in second and third and fourth languages. So again, there's still the hierarchy, there's still the power really is in the language, right? Not in the speaker. Translanguaging does away with the language hierarchies and returns the power to the speaker, not to the nation state, but to the speaker. What do speakers do? And that's why we have only one box that has no hierarchical relationships. And we're talking about features that are not, that internally we have, that are not L1 and L2 and L3. They're ends, they're ours, right? So features that they are ours, they're the speakers, and that we select as we make ourselves known. Okay, so now I'm turning into the classroom. I have called it the translanguaging corriente, the current, right? Because sometimes we see it, sometimes we don't, but it's always there. When you work with multilingual children, it's always there, right? And I think often it's like being at the shore, you know? I love the sea. And I when I'm at the shore, I say, well, where does the sea begin and where does the sand begin? Depends, right? And it's the same with our languages. When our languages are internal, we don't know when one ends and the other begins, right? So it's this idea that we're talking about beyond languages and that this current is always with us, right? So Ricardo especially talks about the speaker's idiolect shaping their own language repertoire. We all have an idiolect, right? That is ours. And this, of course, is also surrounded by this communicative repertoire. So it's not only our linguistic repertoire, which is related to our idiolect, but also how we surround it by gestures, by context, by other ways of making meaning, and how we bring that forth as hints so that you, we select what it is that is important, so that you, the hearer, construct or not a message. I hope that you're constructing a message, but I don't know, right? I speak, I hope that you, I select signs that I hope give you hints of what you should be thinking about, but you are constructing a message or not, right? Okay. So that's what translanguaging is about. Translanguaging is that act that takes you into a translanguaging space, a space when we where we deploy the features of our repertoire, and that then there's a transaction between the interlocutors, right? So that's the idea. So what is a translanguaging classroom then? A translanguaging classroom then takes into account the student's unitary linguistic system and gives opportunities to deploy their full linguistic repertoire and not only the particular named languages, right? So both things. And it validates the bilingual community practices as well as those sanctioned in schools, because it's important to remember that all bilingual communities translanguage. It is the norm in bilingual communities to do it this way, right? It's just schools that do not allow the children to do it, right? So why translanguaging? What is it? And how is it done? So I think it's very important to first always remember the why, right? Because without the why, doesn't make any sense. Any of the work we do does not make any sense. So one of the important things is to make sure that we understand that when translanguaging is not taken into account, you are doing injustices to the children, to language minoritized children. You are not being fair. You are not thinking of social justice. You are not thinking of how to make the situation more equal. So one thing is that when you teach them, you're only mobilizing less than half of their repertoire. You're leaving another big part away, not considering it. And I think even more important, when you assess them, when you test them, you are testing them in less than half of their repertoire. So it's very important to remember that this shift that has to take place because if you don't take translanguaging into account, you are instructing the children with less than half of their repertoire, and you're assessing only less than half of their repertoire. So of course, they're always going to do poorer than monolingual children because monolingual children are being assessed with almost their full repertoire. Almost, because sometimes not all, but almost their full repertoire. With our bilingual children, you're only assessing less than half of it. So, you know, I say, well, it's like assessing drummers. Someone plays with the two hands, the other one only plays with one, and you're thinking that the sound has to be the same. Impossible, right? So I think it's important to think of the why, but then the what. And in the translanguaging classroom, we talk about three components. One, the stance, that is the belief, the attitude that you have to have. Because before you start teaching, you have to have a stance. You have to have a belief, a position, right? The second thing is the design. How do you design a classroom so that you can really make this work? And the third thing is the shift, because if even after you're designing classrooms, even after you've gotten your lesson plan, even after you have grouped the students so that they can work together, there are times in teaching, which as all of you know who teach, where you have to change, right? So there has to be shifts. And it's important to think of when the shifts have to occur. So let me first start with a stance, with the belief, right? One belief is that you have to go beyond the name languages, right? The name languages themselves are not enough. Another belief is that you have to think of how to construct a unitary bilingual voice that is their own, not just the languages isolated. Another belief is that this has to be done not only for scaffolding. Teachers often believe in translanguaging right away as a scaffold, as a way of facilitating meaning for students. But what they have a hard time doing is thinking of what are the transformations that take place through translanguaging, right? So I think I always like to talk about not the scaffolding part, not translanguaging for the child who came in yesterday, and therefore you have to use translanguaging because otherwise he or she doesn't understand what's going on. But for the child who's already bilingual, how do you transform the sense of who they are, their subjectivity through translanguaging? So we call it the juntos stance, the together stance. Juntos in Spanish means together. And one of the things, and so these are the four stances that we work with so that the teachers understand that the bilingual students do not have a separate name languages, but that these, all the features work juntos, right? They work together. That they also are not simply two different people, that they do not have two separate identities. If you're going to stay, you have one identity that is complex and dynamic and that shifts, but it's one identity. And you have to remember that there is this junto identity. The other thing is that there is no second language acquisition in the traditional sense, but that what we are doing is we are helping students acquire junto the old features and the new features so that they can then create, they can appropriate these new features into their own language repertoire. So it's not that of the other, it's not that of the Germans, it's not that of the Americans, it is their own, right? So that's a junto thing. And then the idea that it's not simply a scaffold, but that it could be transformative. Just to end and to summarize, so translanguaging has to do with dwelling in the border, in these borderlands with the linguistically minoritized. It's important because it redresses the power differentials and the systems of control that have been installed in the conceptions of languages and sign systems by colonial expansion and nation building. Secondly, it is not simple border crossing, but dwelling in the world and the word entangled through and by the coloniality of power. And thirdly, it's going beyond name languages. I danke.